to the DeCesare Group podcast. I'm your host, Jim DeCesare. It's been almost 1 year since the DeCesare Group kicked off the podcast with Warren County Judge Executive Emeritus Mike Buchanan, and we appreciate you listening. Our topic today is the unprecedented mental health drop-in facility that's in the works for Bowling Green within the next couple of years. To get an update, I recently sat down with Bowling Green City Commissioner Sue Perigin, who is part of a 32-person leadership committee dedicated to seeing this one-of-a-kind facility come to fruition. Sue is serving in her fifth term as city commissioner and as mayor pro tem. In addition to her role in helping bring this unique facility to Bowling Green, she serves on several boards, including the Bowling Green Warren County Drug Task Force, the Intermodal Transportation Authority, better known as the Transpark, the Tax Incremental Finance District, and Downtown Development, and as a Bowling Green Area Chamber of Commerce Ambassador Club member. As you can see, she's a busy person. We appreciate her taking time to update us on this important project. Here's my conversation with Sue Perigin. Hey, Dr. Perigin, welcome to the DeCesare Group podcast.
Thank you.
I got to say DeCesare like our mutual friend Dan Harbison says it. Welcome to the DeCesare podcast.
And Dan is a good friend of mine, too. And I tell you what, he's a great community leader.
Oh, he is. And so are you. And we appreciate you being on to talk about mental health. It's important. So how did this committee get started?
Well, about 15 months ago. Just before the judge was leaving office, the judge, myself, and
you're talking about Mike Buchanan.
Yes, okay. Judge Buchanan. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You'll have to remind me. I'm used to just talking in groups, but I know that I'm out in an audience and need to be a lot more specific. So I will. And the mayor, Todd Alcott, mm-hmm. we're talking, and we really want to make a huge impact on panhandling, homelessness, just a lot of these issues that are happening in our community today. Mental health, addiction, which those all of those things are interrelated and intertwined in a lot of ways. So what I was charged to do by the mayor was to kind of form an exploratory committee and see what kinds of things we could come up with that would impact our community as we grow. Mm-hmm. What we know is these other issues and problems in our community are also going to grow along with us.
Sure.
So we want a proactive approach to kind of putting those issues, giving some solutions, and not allowing them to grow along with us.
Yeah. And we have, if you've driven around Bowling Green or South Central Kentucky, as you mentioned, some of it's a lot of times all intertwined. And, so there's got to be some solutions out there. Tell us about the committee, who's on it, why they're on it, and explain the structure of how this operation is working set up by Mayor Alcott.
So I'll tell you, Jim, when we got this committee, one of the first folks that, of course, the mayor is on the committee, county judge is on the committee. We have a vision, the three of us, to make homelessness kind of really, really hard to do here in Bowling Green and Warren County. We want solutions for these folks. We don't want them to turn to under the...
And when you say make it hard for them to be, you're talking about you want to make sure that we have as few people as possible that are living on the streets. This is part of the solution.
Because we're offering solutions for these types of things that happen to people, and a lot of it stems from mental health and substance abuse and losing your job or winding up in jail because of this. And I want to talk a lot more about our jail as our intake facility. When you wind up in a court system and you can't pay your fines and you lose your job because you had to go to jail, and next thing you know, you got no place to live because if you don't have a job, you can't pay your rent. It's all intertwined. Yeah. And so we want to prevent it from the get-go. From the beginning, when I have a mental health episode, I can get help, the correct kind of help, in a one kind of a front door facility that gets me to all the other solutions around the community.
And I want to ask you about that in a moment, but back to
other
than the mayor, the judge, and you, who's on the committee and why?
I did not answer your question, and I'm well aware, and I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
But let's answer that question right now.
All right.
So the committee was kind of formed organically a little bit. It stemmed from that conversation, and then as somebody that is not in this field of work, I'm in the helping community field of work via a city commissioner, mayor pro tem. I thought to myself, who is affected negatively? Which organizations across our great community are impacted by this. Number one, our policing agencies. And I've been hearing from our chief and our sheriff, who are good friends of mine, that for the decades that they've been serving this community, they have had to be mental health care providers, the front line. So they pick these folks up whenever there's a crisis or a family member calls, and they take them to basically a lobby since the pandemic at Life Skills and wait for a mental health professional to do an evaluation so they can decide, you know, hey, if they're a harm to themselves and others, they're going to probably go to jail. They may actually go to Hopkinsville, but that's going to take some time. In the meantime, we got to have a place to keep them safe. Sometimes they're spending their most of their shift, 4-6 hours. I think it's on average about 4 hours with each individual, which takes them away from what they're hired to do, which is to provide public safety.
Right.
Now they're one-on-one with the mental health patient, where we, with this new facility, could take them through this portal, this front door, leave them, go back to our jobs, and let the mental health professionals kind of calm the situation down, evaluate the situation, and decide maybe all you need is a 23-hour evaluation. Yeah. So I looked at them, the jail, has our de facto mental health intake facility. That's what that is. According to Jailer Harmon, about 90% of the people that are in there have some sort of mental health or substance abuse.
Sure.
Let that sink in. 90%. Could we have helped them in their first visit, in their first visit with a police officer through this portal, through this front door? Could we have helped them to get past that, you know, be proactive in the beginning of these issues?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. Then I've thought about the... how about our health department?
Yeah.
They're on the committee. How about our emergency rooms that are inundated and overrun?
Right.
With mental health, substance abuse, these types of things. And then the judiciary. Just so happened, I looked across the Rotary Club and I saw Judge Hines. And I said, Judge Hines, can I talk to you about something? Also, Judge Minton, who is a big champion for us. How many folks coming through the judiciary down here, which is so backlogged that they can't get their head above water, are here because of coming into the system through the jail for my mental health or substance abuse issue? They're coming into this jail a lot, many. So on and on, how we just took a look across the spectrum of organizations that are impacted in a negative way by this. And when you could have a portal, a single door, and bypass that judicial system. First, we won't have them in a jail if they haven't really broken the law.
Yeah.
But we really don't have another solution for them.
It's the old adage about, you know, government spends a good portion of the money funding schools and jails.
Yes, they
do. So now you've got option C.
They do. And one of our biggest problems in Warren County, I don't want to speak for the judge, is the money that it costs to run the jail. Mm-hmm. The jail is way overcrowded. There's more people in our jail than we have beds for. And what if they didn't go straight to jail? What if they went to help?
Yeah.
What if they went to a place that was designed and staffed as an intake facility for a mental health crisis or a substance abuse crisis? What if they went there and they didn't get themselves, you know, a ticket or an infraction or
could just be out, you know, wandering around, sometimes just lost.
We have instances where a neighbor calls because there's somebody in the front yard naked screaming at people driving down the street. Are they breaking a law?
Maybe it's minor.
Maybe an indecent exposure law, but because of the mental health issues, should they go to jail?
No.
Is that really the
place?
You
don't put people in jail you're mad at.
No.
You get them help.
You get help for them. That's exactly right. So
you got the jailer, you got Judge Hines, you got Chief Justice Minton, you got the sheriff, the police chief. Who else?
Life Skills.
Yeah. Big one. Joe Dan Beavers and that gang there, man, they're great.
Melanie Watts, they know their business, and they are eager to provide a piece of property over there on Lover's Lane that's worth about $1.8 million at no cost to anybody, to the state or us. And if we can get the money for the capital project to build this facility, they will manage and run this. They are our regional mental health care provider. They're a quasi-governmental entity
super
that is in place to do this, and they want to do this so bad. They just really want to make a bigger impact in our community in a more deliberate way.
Yeah.
And Joe Dan will tell you this, and we had a press conference a few weeks ago. Joe Dan is the CEO of Life Skills.
Life Skills, we should
and,
mention that.
Yeah, he's just amazing in the work that he's doing. But what they really want to do is be that portal, be that coordinating entity. Today, you might go to jail, or you might go to Hopkinsville, or you might find yourself somehow with Life Skills Services. Everybody that is involved in this issue is doing all that they can do within the confines of what their organization dictates they can do.
Right.
So there's no portal. There's no that one place you go in, you get your crisis kind of calmed down, and then you look across the continuum of care across our community, which there are a lot of things that you can engage in. As a matter of fact, today, this morning, I went to a groundbreaking at the Hope House, the new women's facility.
Is it in the same area as the men's?
No.
Version? Okay.
No, it is
not. I'm
not
going to say where it is either.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. And it's fine. It's there for women specifically. It's over in the Glen Lily Road area, and it's beautiful and brand new. Right now, they've got kind of dormitory living, but what their groundbreaking was for townhouses. And then from there, they're building a ministry on campus, and then they're building 24 tiny homes. And that's to transition from one part of your recovery, which is, I need this group living, I need this constant.
From dependence to independence.
Right, quasi-independence, and then dependence.
Yeah.
And help you get a job. And they have had a wild amount of success. But if you're in a crisis, that's not the place you start. They don't have the ability to handle mental health crisis, substance abuse crises.
Right.
That point where that person is actually pretty much falling apart. They don't have the ability to handle that. It's after you're stabilized that you go into a program that's more of a long-term solution.
Yeah, that's
so
awesome.
So that's where Joe Dan and this committee, they really want to make a difference. We even have a for-profit mental health provider that does mental health on our committee. Because there's a place for that, obviously.
Sure.
So our committee's made up of about 32 folks. We also have state legislators on our committee.
Nice.
We have some federal folks that represent our federal delegation up in Washington on our committee. While they don't provide funding for building a building, there are pockets of funding at the federal level for things like beds, equipment, those kinds of things.
Absolutely.
That we're going to have to have. So
there's money out there. You just got to know where to find it.
Well, having. I'm going to say this about this committee, Jim, because you asked about the makeup.
Yeah.
I've been on a lot of committees. You know what? You've seen me. I've been around a long time. Try to be a community leader. Try to give back.
Did I mention that you're my friend, Sue Perigin, when I introduced you? If I didn't, I should have said that.
I'm proud to be your friend. We've been friends for a long time.
I've seen you everywhere.
We understand each other and our willingness to want to make a difference in our community. I have yet to be on a committee where 32 committee members share the same vision. Everybody gets a win in some different way, right?
Mm-hmm.
The sheriff's department and the police department, they're going to spend less time with the mental health folks, and they're going to be able to impact these folks in a different way. The jail gets to have a lower census. So does the emergency rooms.
Yeah.
On and on for the impactfulness that this is going to make for all of these organizations, including the judiciary. But everybody on this committee is in agreement. Nobody has said, well, we shouldn't, or why don't we do what? Nobody. And every committee member has commented to me that, hey, wow, I've never been in a committee that had such a singular vision for a solution to a problem that we all have to deal with. That to me is humbling. Why do I believe that works in this case? Because I'm the chair of the committee. I don't work for Life Skills. I don't work for the jail. I don't work for the police department. I don't represent any one of these entities. I represent the whole community.
Right.
So there's a different approach, because all of these organizations have recognized that this has been a problem for a long time.
Yeah.
The sheriff will tell you 30 years he's been in this game. The chief of police the same way.
Yeah.
When the chief said at the press conference 2 Mondays ago, two or three Mondays ago, I guess it was.
A few weeks ago.
He said, he said this comment, for the first time in my career, I have hope. Hope for a different way to handle this issue.
Wow.
Now, coming from our chief of police, who is one of the most respected people that I know.
Oh, yeah.
And I respect him more than pretty much anybody I know.
Yeah, Chief Delaney's awesome.
To say that he now has hope because of the work of this committee and what could happen with his agency, that is a powerful statement.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Crisis Mental Health Intake Center itself.
Absolutely.
So tell us about how this would work, the purpose of it, and the, okay. the background.
And I'll start by prefacing that there is a similar facility that we're modeling after. There's one in Arizona. There's half a dozen or so around the country that we've
looked at. You're getting ahead of me on my questions here.
I'm sorry. But this all ties together.
I know.
So the one that we really looked at was put up, built in 2019 as the pandemic was approaching, mm-hmm. in the east side of Nashville. So most of our committee has visited down there. It's a campus, so it's got three buildings. The crisis mental health facility that we looked at has some unique features. It has a walk-in, because this could be voluntary. You can walk in as a citizen and say, hey, you know, man, or you know, your mom take you, or however that's going to work. But secondly, they have its own vestibule where our police agencies can take, or an ambulance even, can take these folks to a private, more secure entrance in a vestibule. And it's a handoff. Yeah. So there is a chain of custody that has to happen with these folks. And today, as I told you, it's on average 4 hours for our policing agency. By ordinance in Davidson County, it's 10 minutes or under. Now, I don't know that we can get there out of the gate, but our proposal is for 1 hour and less for our policing agency to have arrived, given the details of the circumstances that caused this person to need to come there. And do whatever they have to do paperwork wise and be back on the job on the streets. So that is the crisis intervention part of this facility. That's a 23-hour or less, and this is built out by Medicare and other agencies. So then there is a second part of this facility, which is a different building, which is sort of a 3 to 5 day. I'm not able to be really, you know, impacted in that 23 hours. I need to be checked in 3 to 5 days. We're going to get our meds straight. We're going to get counseling. We're not going to leave this facility, no matter whether you're in the crisis or the mid-level or the higher level care, without counselors and therapists and people that are checking on you, making sure your meds are straight, making sure you're taking your meds, making sure you're getting some actual job training out there. But the third level of this particular facility down in Nashville is a no more than 10-day kind of a thing, where you're waiting for permanent housing. You know, they're going to help you to get somewhere to be housed.
Right.
So that's sort of the model that we're looking at and what we would like to accomplish. Of course, every state has different laws and different things, so we're going to have to work within ours.
So are you going to be required to have a certificate of need for this facility?
No, sir. Not awesome. For this type. Yes, it is so awesome. That was asked at the press conference, and for this type of facility, because it's not really a hospital.
Yeah.
It's really a temporary kind of a transitional
facility.
Thing. Right. It's a crisis intervention center. Yeah. So you're in crisis, but the life skills here, an amazing organization, mm-hmm. serves to help people to find jobs, permanent places to live, get their medication straight. You know, all this is wraparound services that can go on and on and on as long as you need them. And you know, like I say, it's quasi-governmental, so you know the taxpayers are really funding a lot of this.
Well,
Medicaid, Medicare.
So you're funding it, but it costs a lot less for the taxpayers.
Absolutely.
To go to a facility like this than to go to jail.
Certainly it
or
does.
Or through the court system.
So you go to jail, you get into the court system.
Or taking a police officer off the street. Or, you know, I could go on for days.
That's why I keep using the word proactive. You're getting out in front of this problem. And I want you to think for a minute of a recent incident that happened in Bowling Green. And I don't pretend to think or to predict or to be, you know, any visionary on this one. But we had an officer that was shot by a known mental ill citizen that they had touched many, many times. They all know him. I just feel like maybe, perhaps, if we would have got that person on the first incident of a crisis, could we have changed the trajectory of that? And how many other incidences around our community could we have changed the trajectory had we met that person in the initial time that they were having a mental health crisis?
And you're talking about Officer Matt Davis.
I am. And
he's
our hero.
He's doing well. He's on the road to recovery, but saw him at a WKU basketball game not too long ago.
Certainly he is, but could we have prevented that person from dying? And could we have prevented our officer from... I can't answer that question.
No, but
we'd have a greater
chance. We get the point. What you're saying is that if at first contact with this person or a person like him, if they would have had a facility like this, that might have been the difference maker.
Could be.
Yeah.
Probably.
And
most cases probably would be.
Yeah, and it's a more cost effective, less of a burden not only on government resources but nonprofit resources as well.
Community resources. There's over a dozen nonprofits touching one issue, and that's homelessness. Yeah. Could we prevent homelessness by having our mentally ill and substance abuse folks avoid in being incarcerated, incarceration will get you to lose a job pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then now you have no way to pay for your home or your family. And next thing you know, you're going to court, and then that costs a lot of money. And so, you know, I'm not sure that this, I'm not going to say I'm not sure. I am sure that this type of proactive approach will prevent homelessness in our community.
Yeah, you're never going to get rid of it.
No. I don't pretend to, but let's make it a lot less likely that you're going to fall into that.
So you talked about Nashville and I think at Phoenix, Arizona.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Are there any communities in similar size to Bowling Green or Warren County that have similar facilities?
Well,
are you the pace setter for this?
You know, in this Commonwealth, this will be a prototype.
Okay.
And we talk about this a lot, especially with our state lawmakers who are extremely excited. Our local state lawmakers, it's in their court now.
Yeah.
Not them specifically, but to take this message to the Appropriations Committee.
Yeah.
To make the case that the Commonwealth of Kentucky could have a prototype. We could have an example of how to proactively and correctly handle a mental health crisis, substance abuse crisis for our state. How exciting would that be? And let's not just leave the state's boundaries. Let's let other states, like we looked out there to Tennessee, we looked out there to Phoenix. There's a one in Ohio that Joe Dan did a lot of research in, and we're not all exactly what we're doing.
And you may be saying, well, you know, how's the county jail impacted by that? Well, you may not know this if you're listening, but the county jail, the Warren County Regional Detention Center, they house state and federal prisoners.
Sure they do.
And so because they have issues with population increases as well.
Yes, that's right.
So if there's a way, the state will benefit from this. And of course, talking about the funding aspect of it, you know, the legislature is in session. This is the budget year. So this is the time to be asking for appropriations.
Absolutely.
To help with programs like
this.
And
that is exactly what we're doing as we speak, Jim.
So what kind of time frame are we looking at here to get this?
If we can get the appropriations during this budget session.
What kind of numbers are we talking?
$23 million, according to Joe Dan, to build a 24-bed facility. And this will also consolidate. There's another facility that's out there by the Armory on Morgantown Road.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, I think it's a 6 or 8-bed facility that all of this would be brought under one roof, so it would consolidate its services.
Nice.
And be located out in our new medical hub out on Lover's Lane, where Fairview Community Health could offer some services. There's pharmacies out there. You know, these kinds of wraparound services that are going to be necessary to make this successful are already located there.
And I believe, you correct me if I'm wrong, there's transportation services available
to that area
as well. So.
Absolutely, there are. So it's an exciting thing, but what we need is about $23 million for the capital project.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Life Skills has assured, and we have assured
the Commonwealth,
state, and the state folks that are making these decisions that we will not come back for operational expenses. There will be no need to come back for operational expenses.
And I, you know, people who've listened to this podcast have heard me say this before when we've had some other government officials on. It's building the project's not the big money item.
No.
It's operations and maintenance.
That's exactly right. And so, they're willing to give the land and they're willing to operate it.
Yeah.
It may take them some time to operate it where it's not depleting from their reserves or whatever else they do. But we have put together a 10-page or so white paper that explains exactly how this will work.
A business plan.
Exactly. And they have folks on staff. I mean, it's not like they have to hire all the new people. When they consolidate the other organization, there are people that work there already that can come in. But what we need money. Now, and I also, the $23 million, I'm going to go on record here, because one of the biggest things from the state level that they're asking us is, what's your skin in the game, city and county? What are you willing to give? Well, I have authorization to say that we're willing to give $1 million out of our general fund budget towards building this facility.
All right.
And that makes a pretty good statement that, yeah, the city of Bowling Green is ready.
Yeah.
We're also willing to give our opioid funding, which we have opioid funding coming from now till I think 17 or 18 more years. Right now, we've got $344,000, I think, or maybe a few more. But over this period, it is going to be in the millions of opioid funding. And we're willing to provide that. Now, you can't use opioid funding for building buildings, but you can use it for operations and equipment and other things. Grant money out that's going to be available out there because of the fentanyl issues and the opioid. All these things that have come upon our communities that communities are struggling to deal with.
Right.
Well, we're trying to deal with it in a more, I guess, again, I could quit using the word proactive, but that's what we're doing, and target using our opioid money for this kind of programming rather than buying Narcan, which we could certainly do that ourselves anyway.
Yeah.
But there's a limited amount of uses that a community can do without having some sort of a facility that provides these services.
Well, this is a wonderful program that Mayor Alcott and you and others have developed here, instigated,
right.
For lack of a better term.
I'm a matchmaker.
You're a facilitator.
I am the committee chair. What I do is I bring the people together, and we all come up with solutions. I certainly don't work in any of these areas, so I'm not the expert in any one of those areas. But I think because I am a neutral facilitator, chair, that everybody is free to say, this is the outcomes that we want for this entire group, rather than just my organization.
Yeah. Well, and it just, being proactive, as you said, but from a leadership standpoint, from Mayor Alcott and you and others, sort of identify, I think everybody knows there's an issue out there,
Absolutely.
It's been identified, but sort of saying, all right, well, let's take some action. Let's do
and
it.
Hey, I don't want to leave our city manager out, who is completely
Jeff
supportive, and our CFO, Katie Schallerwood. They're very supportive of this. And I haven't met, I haven't met a person that isn't, because before I really got a lot of folks on this committee, I did a lot of just talking. What do you think about if we had something?
You do a lot of talking?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I do. But I wanted to find out what people thought about it.
Yeah.
So accidentally talking to Judge Minton. Judge Minton's like, I want to be a part of it. Judge Hines, how can I get involved? Well, he went on the trip to see the facility, and that's how this committee has grown. And I don't know everybody that affects, but then we brought in the Barron River Area Development District, Eric Sexton, kind of later in the game, only because he's regional. We wanted to make sure that we could come up with something here in Bowling Green, Warren County. He is taking this and spreading it to our counties that we serve, and so far 100% are on board, willing to give some opioid money, maybe some seed money for the building, but that's where we're at, and so we're going countywide.
Awesome.
According to Joe Dan, nobody will be turned away. I don't care if you come from Grayson County and you're not in the ad district or wherever, you wander in that facility, you're going to get some help.
That's fantastic. Well, Sue, we really appreciate you telling us more about this wonderful program, but more importantly, We appreciate you being on the DeCesare Group podcast.
Sure. That could be about the fastest 30 minutes I've ever spent because, Jim, as you know, I could probably talk all day about this.
We're limited by time.
It's just so exciting. I know you are.
And, thanks for being on.
And invite me back sometime. We'll talk about something else. Okay?
We'll do that.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks to Bowling Green City Commissioner Sue Perigin for joining us on the DeCesare Group podcast. And if you want more information about the mental health drop-in facility, I put a white paper in the show notes so you can download it and check it out. Stay up to date with the latest episodes of the DeCesare Group podcast by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. And if you like what you hear, leave us a nice review. And you can stay connected with the DeCesare Group by following us on LinkedIn, Facebook, X, and Instagram. And you can subscribe to our newsletter, Soke Economic Development and Business News, by visiting our website, thedecesaregroup.com. The DeCesare Group podcast is produced by the DeCesare Group, a full-service public relations and consulting firm in South Central Kentucky. The engineer and the man making all this happen is the podcast maestro, Justin DeCesare, with content contributions from Burke Mattingly and Amy DeCesare. I'm Jim DeCesare, and I'll see you next time on the DeCesare Group podcast.